extra careful is, it should be echoing in your brain, extra careful. Here's just one other question. Is this variable, or is it a fixed at 13.8?
NGLGR. Recognizing N0TR. Tom, I'll go ahead and get you in the log, sir. N0TR. Please tell Miss Bernice we said hello. And that's Mr. Tom from Greer. Tom, I'll get you here to comment here in just a second. It is variable, Larry. It is variable.
Listen, I'm just anxious to hear what Tom got to say. Everybody's heard enough of me anyway. So, good that you're still with us. I will say a prayer of thanks that you're still with us, because dark bones can be dangerous. Chad, you have yourself a good night. And Anna, God bless you for keeping him whole. Everyone out there, have a good night's rest and a good rest of the week. KK4, JPQ.
73's Larry. Until Miss Donna, we said hello. You be safe. Have a wonderful week. And Tom, if you got a short comment for us, so go ahead, sir.
Ken, excuse me for breaking in. Good evening, Larry. I just wanted to check in and mute that, Bernice. And I assumed you're working on a Astron power supply or something like that. What's the number on the chip?
Let me call you tomorrow, Tom. I've got it written down here in one of my notes. 53 something, I believe. But I'll give you an exact chip number tomorrow, and I'll let you know.
Is it a 14-pin, like, TTL integrated circuit?
Yes, sir, it is. Slides in and out. Fits one direction onto the board.
Okay. Come on over, and I'll give you one. I'd have to walk over there on the other side of the TV set. I'm sitting in front of the computer downstairs here, and I kind of keep things, there's a Zener diode in there that goes out, and there's a regulator that goes out. I was thinking it was a 723, but just right offhand, I haven't messed with them in a little while. But if it is, I'll give it to you, Chad, and you can fix that board.
I appreciate it. I'll give you all a tomorrow, and we'll go from there. But tell Miss Bernice we said hello, and you have a nice evening, sir. And I'll give you a holler tomorrow. All right, before we move next on the stump, which is Mr. Gary in Easley, let me make one more call. Alpha 3 Zulu, any station, Alpha 3 Zulu, please call KO4 NUE.
H-A-O-Y.
Go ahead, ma'am. How are you tonight?
I'm Diffless. And as the least angry woman in all of Easley, South Carolina, may I say that if upon closer inspection you have cracked that ceramic insulator, let me know, because I have an abundant supply.
Okay, all right. I'll let you know. But it twacked pretty hard. I mean, like I said, it was enough to make me make noises and sit there and, you know, squint my eyes a couple of times and call myself a dummy a couple of times. But I'll let you know if it's cracked, and I'll swing over and pick one up from you.
You and Anna have a wonderful evening, and with that, I'll get off here, and I guess you want to talk to the other half. Because everybody knows I'm the better half. K3JOY clear.
Yes, I agree. All right, Miss Joy, 73s, and you have a wonderful evening, ma'am, and it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and you have a wonderful, wonderful week. All right, next up on the list is KI4DOS. That's Mr. Gary. Gary, go ahead, sir.
And you, Ian, and Annette, KI4DOS. Well, good evening again, Mr. Chad, Miss Anna, and Annette. Again, I apologize for being calling you a knothead a while ago, but when that goes down, I'll still be the ugliest man in the world, Era. What do you think?
As long as you're alive, I'm good. I'm good. And I I've been called a lot worse than a knothead. I don't, stuff like that don't bother me. You know that. But, Anna looked at me and she said, you're bleeding. What did you do? She just started laughing. So I went in there and looked in the mirror and it's, you know, nice little, I'm quite proud of them actually. You know, there's six little ridges on there and I got 2.5 of them. So I got almost all of it. That's good, right?
Oh yeah, and you were saying something about you thought you might need a stitch and what. I'm gonna tell Anna I'll come over tomorrow and stitch that up for you.
But I'm saying no. I don't do needles, I don't do sutures, and I don't do dentists at all. So, you know, I love you, but we might go round and round if you pull out a needle or stitch. I ain't saying I'd win, but I'm saying we both know we'd been in a tussle. How about that?
I won't bring a needle and thread. I'll bring a staple gun instead.
I don't do that either. I don't like to do any of that. 2 years ago, me and Chris bought a bunch of tooling. Maybe it's been 3 years ago, Gary. A bunch of it. And I had the shop just slam full of cutters and machinery and had a bunch of metal boxes made out of metal. That held just a bunch of, you know, really sharp cutters laying on the floor trying to organize them. They probably fixed 50, 60 pounds a box. And I put them in there with Bobcat. You got roll-up doors, and there's a rope that hangs on the center handle so you can grab the rope to pull the door. It hung up on the Bobcat, and I pulled the door out of the rail, out of the rack, the guide. So I, you know, got in a hurry and stood up on a 5-gallon bucket trying to get it back in track, and the bucket slipped out from under me, and I fell into the tooling. Hit my head on the back of the metal box. I think it was 12 stitches, 12 or 13, it may have been staples, staples or stitches in the back of my head. I have never hit my head that hard before. I don't know how long I laid there in the floor. There was a pretty good bit of blood in the floor where I'd laid there. I think it kind of knocked me out for a little while. And got up, walked to the house. It's 98 steps from the house to the shop. And on the way to the house, Gary, I could not keep my eyes open. I was so sleepy. I was literally going to sleep standing up trying to get to the house. And Anna was gone, so I came in the house and sat down in the recliner, and I just needed to rest for a minute. And I sat there in the chair, and I went to sleep for probably about 2 or 3 hours, which is a no-no, you know that. But it took me months to recover from that. My body was sore, nausea, headaches that went on for weeks. But, I was pretty sick for a couple of weeks. But, those head injuries, they can be pretty bad. But that's the worst I've ever, you know, cut my head. And me and the doctors didn't, we just went round and round when we went to the hospital. He didn't numb me up very well. And I let him know about it. I mean, bad.
I understand what you're talking about, not being numbed up. I hate that you fell like that and hit your head so hard. But I was I was in the Navy, and I cut my thumb real bad one night, and I went over to the base, over to the infirmary, and this nice little corpsman, he looked at it, and he says, "Oh, okay, we'll clean this up." First thing he did is he spread the cut open and scrubbed it with a brush, which I didn't appreciate too much. And this was before he gave me the Novocaine and that sort of stuff. And then he took the needle and gave me the Novocaine right down in the middle of the cut. And then he proceeded to stitch it up. And he was talking to me the whole time and laughing and cutting up. And by this time, the Novocaine's starting to wear off. And he looked at it, and he's looking at it, and he said, "Well, what do you think?" I said, "Well, it looks pretty good to me." He said, "If somebody comes in here with a cut on their face, I don't want it to leave a scar." He said, "I don't want this to leave a scar either." So he said, "Let's put one more stitch in it." And he stuck me in the Novocaine that wore off. Oh, man, I called him all kinds of stuff that I can't repeat on the air. I wouldn't want to anyway. But I know where you're coming from when you have words with a doctor about stuff like that. But enough of that foolishness. I was going to tell you about my day. I was out running errands today, and I got to my first stop. Everything went fine. I went over to my second stop, and it seemed to go fine there. I left there to go up to my third stop, and I go in and get the stuff I need to get, and I come back out, and I'm starting to look around in my truck, and I could not find my phone. And I said, "Well, did I leave it inside, or did I leave it down at my second stop? Because I know I had it when I left my first stop." So I drove all the way back down to my second stop, and as I was pulling in, my phone rang. And it was under my leg. I didn't know I was sitting on it.
All I can say is that I had a pair of glasses perched up on my head and can't find them. And sometimes I'll be up to Chris, working with Chris. I've done that a couple of times. And, you know, "Hey, where's my glasses? I laid my glasses down." And he just looks at me and grins, which usually means they're sitting up on top of my head. So I know what you mean. I get it. But let me back up just a minute. And Gary, we didn't have corpsmen. We didn't call them corpsmen. We had medics that stayed with us. And he was pretty good, you know. He was pretty up on that stuff. But he had a saying anytime you'd get hurt. Hey, you know, had a little routine. You okay? He'd check you out. He'd talk to you a minute and calm you down a little bit. And then, you know, if you had a cut or something that was hurting pretty bad, he'd look at you straight in the eyes and say, "Now, I got to tell you, now, pain is your problem. It's not mine. It's your problem." And you know when he starts off with that, it's not going to be good. But he did a good job, but he didn't mind inspecting, you know, wounds and things like that. He'd interrogate in a minute. He didn't care whether it hurt or not, because he's trying to help you, you know. But he'd tell you, pain's your problem, not mine. And you just tell him, I don't like you very much. And he says, "I know, nobody does, but let me look at it anyway."
I think they send the medics and the corpsmen to the same school, and they tell them, you know, it's okay if you hurt the other person as long as you're not hurt when you do it.
They fill their head with, you know, you trying to help this person. You know, you do what you got to do. And, you know, I get it. But he did a good job, but I never did like mess with him too much. I tried to stay away from him as much as I could. But when, you know, when you need them, you need them, and you want them to do what they got to do, and you want them to be good at it. But, you know, dentist, I tell my dentist all the time, I don't like him very much. He knows I'm kidding, but he comes in before he gives me the laughing gas, and he always tells me, "Hey, you know, know, let me hear it. Go ahead and get it all out. I want you sober so I can hear it, so I can respond. So we'll banter back and forth about how much we don't like one another, and then, you know, here comes the gas. So, you know, I get it. We to try to have fun with it, I guess.
And Gerald T.R. Well, Gary, you was talking about hurting yourself and that a while ago, and you said Chad was a knothead. I would concur with that. But tell him what you nicknamed Bob up in Hendersonville.
You gonna really put me on the spot now? This KI4DOS in case anybody cares. Chad Bob, ND7J up in Hendersonville, went out to his mailbox. And his neighbor backed over him and hit him with a car. So I called him speed bump after that.
What did he say when you told him that?
See, you got off easy, Chad.
Oh, dear. Well, I got anything to relate to that. Okay, so Dad, a couple years ago, bought a wheeled Bobcat. Dad doesn't do good on equipment. He's not aware of limitations. He just goes wide open and, you know, don't think about the consequences sometimes. But he's really bad on the Bobcat. You cannot see behind you on a Bobcat. And he always gets me to run it. And he's always in my blind spot where you cannot see him. And I holler at him all the time because I have to shut the machine down. Because I've already killed two goats out in the pasture because I can't see them. And I'm just afraid I'm going to run over him. So we digging a water line up at Meemaw's about 2 years ago. And I'm doing just fine with a bucket, but he has to get in there with a shovel where I can see him. And I tell him, Daddy, just let me dig the hole. Stand over there where I can see you. And when it needs to be cleared out, I'll back out and you clear it out. He just won't do it. He gets in there with a shovel, gets in the way. So I just took the bucket, and when he gets in the hole, I just take the bucket and I just roll the whole Bobcat, just push him right out of the way. He gets mad at me, but I've never run over him with a car, but what did he say to the neighbor?
Oh, they got it all worked out between the two of them, and he was all right, which was the main thing, but he was telling me about it, and I got tickled, I told him, I said, oh, you're now a speed bump. But you're talking about not running over your dad with a Bobcat. Before I retired, my boss was bad about coming out and getting on the dock and just wandering up and down the dock. And I was unloading the last trailer that we had coming in that night. And he was down at the golf cart where he normally sat smoking a cigarette. And he was talking to some other guys, and I went in the trailer, and I did not know he left. And I came out of the trailer and wasn't looking behind me. I admit, I was not looking. And all of a sudden, my forklift bounced up, and what in the world? I looked down in the floor, and I couldn't see a piece of wood or anything that I might have run over. And there's two other guys standing down at the golf cart, and they started hollering at me. And I stopped and turned the forklift off so I could hear them. And I had pulled a shoe off of my boss's foot and hit him with that weight on the back of the forklift and knocked him across the dock. And he got up and you're talking about sweating bullets now. I was. I thought I'd done killed a man, and he came over to me finally, and he said, would you move the forklift so I can get my shoe? And I moved the forklift, and he got his shoe. Put it back on, and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm fired now for sure. And I apologized to him, and I told him, I said, I was not looking behind me because y'all were down there talking. He said, well, it was my fault. I thought I was past you, and I wasn't. So can't many people say that they run over their boss with a forklift and didn't get fired for it.
NUE, KL4DOS, and N0TR. So, yeah, I know, you know, I guess it's both people technically responsible. You know, you just got to be careful around that stuff. I put a rearview mirror on Dad's Bobcat so I could try to see behind me. Because he gets anxious with, you know, wanting to do this and do that. You know, I just got to be really careful because I'm afraid I'm going to run over him. And you know, those Bobcats, you know, they're forklift or anything like that. It's hurt a man pretty quick if it doesn't kill him. But like I said, I've already got two goats down there in the pasture. They want to get up on the bucket or get up on the tracks or get behind it, and you just can't see them. So we got a standing rule: anytime we go in the pasture, he takes the 22 pistol down there, and he'll shoot in the ground four or five times, and that runs them off down the other end of the pasture. Because they're just so curious, they they'll just get up under the thing before you know it, and done kill one of them. But hard lessons. You know, I've got a bunch of scars on my head from, you know, hard lessons, and today I learned another one with an insulator, and like I said, it did get me pretty good, and made me pause for a second, if you know what I mean.
Make one more comment and let you carry on with the net. We're going to have to get you one of those catcher's masks, or one of them that, they use for bull riding now. It's got a full face mask, but it's made out of that real stiff wire and a hard hat. That way you won't have to worry about those dog bones anymore. Anyway, I'll turn it back over to you and let you carry on with it. Sound like you got a super net going. Appreciate you calling it, and we'll talk at you a little bit later. You and Anna have a great evening, and we'll do it again. KO4NUE in the net, KI4DOS.
Hey, Gary, it's Joy talking to you, and to Miss Joy, I said hello, and hope y'all have a wonderful week. If you need anything from me, just give me a holler. All right, Mr. Tom, you got anything else for us, sir?
But I don't know, Gary, about furnishing him with a helmet. It might improve his looks, you know, without it. But and I was just thinking, I bet he ate the goat. I'll say goodnight, Jen. 73. I just couldn't resist that about Bob up there because we all called him Speed Bump. So next time you talk to him, be sure you let him know that. he's a card. It's N0TR 73, Jen.
Be safe. And just remember, as long as Gary is alive, I'm not the ugliest man in the world. But when he passes away, I'm in trouble. So with that, 73s to both of you, and y'all have a wonderful evening. It's a pleasure talking with you. All right. Are there any more stations, Alpha through Zulu, that would like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net? Please call KO4NUE. For check-ins or comments, please call KO4NUE. Please stand by for my net report. I'll now return the repeater back to normal amateur use. 73s to all on the net, and it's been a pleasure to be your net controller tonight. This is KO4NUE, and I am clear. Everybody have a wonderful week, and be safe.
N0TR for a quick comment.
Go ahead, Tom.
Chad, that is a 723, and I think there's a Charlie Mike beyond that. I got a whole stick of them. And next time, holler. I don't work on those as an everyday thing, but for a friend, yes. And then there's past transistors, and there's a Zener diode that goes out in there, and sometimes there's a crowbar circuit goes out. But I think I might give Gary the last SCR I had many years ago for his. He drove up here and got it. It's the first time I met him. And if I remember right, and it's one that can go out too. But like you said, it's probably that regulator, Chad. That's pretty common, and it's socketed, isn't it?
I did suspect the SCR. There's actually two of them in it. One of them comes with a capacitor that moves across the input or maybe the output of the gate. I'm not sure. I guess I'll have to look and see exactly how that's set up. But after talking with the tech support guys, he was telling me I was going to order the chip. And he said, well, we don't have any chips. We can see the whole board, which didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But he said, it's just hard to get chips. And he said, he'd have to go look. He think he may had a couple of SCRs back there. I think he had two left for this model. But I didn't realize chips were, you know, part of all this shortage or supply chain things, but that's a little concerning.
Yeah, it is. I think I might have got mine from Gigaparts. I can't really remember, but it probably says on them over there. I'll show you what I got next time you come down. I even have lightning arresters for boards, but and then I got tons of capacitors and resistors and transistors. But probably none that we need. Of course, they're always going to be different. But I have a checker for SCRs, or I can show you how to check it with an old Simpson 260. Do you have one of those analog meters? And that was the go-to meter in the military.
I do. Old black brick. That's my favorite. Got the little needle. It's got a mirror behind it so you can, you know, see the reflection of the needle. I love that thing. But yes, I do have one.
If you put that on the 10,000 ohm range and take your minus and positive lead and put it on the other two leads, the anode and the cathode, and then take a little jumper and jump from the positive lead over to the gate, it will fire that SCR and bring it up to someplace half scale or so, Chad. And then when you take, you just touch that positive lead, and it will stay on from anode to cathode. Now, you might have to reverse the leads, but usually the anode's going to be the positive lead. And you just put it on there like that, and then just take a little jumper, jump from that positive lead that's hooked on to the SCR, and jump it over to the gate, and that meter should deflect all half, three-quarter scale and stay on. That's the way I checked them for years. You know, you have a fancy one. I finally got one that's got a mirrored scale. And but for many years, I had one that had a 5,000-volt range on it. And the batteries in it leaked and ruined the meter. But I got a brand-new one here. And, in fact, I think it was Rayovac bought me a brand-new meter because they're... Back in the old days, their batteries were guaranteed for life. And I thought, nah, that'll never fly. And my buddy up at Frontneck was Italian and cheap as it could be. And he says, send that in to Railvac and they'll send you a new meter. And I'd forgotten all about it. And I didn't really want to spend the $8 to send it in, to send 0TR. And I did. And about 2 or 3 months later, here come a brand new Simpson 260 with a mirrored scale on it. That was luck.
So that was part of my toolkit. That was issued to me when I went into the radio side in Milton, and all the other guys in the shop used Fluke, the digital stuff. But I love my Simpson. I got the supply guy to order me a leather case to go with it. It's actually a box, but I got the box and the meter, and they had some accessories for the leads. You know, you could put on the end of the leads little clamps and alligator clips and all that kind of stuff. You know, so I got the whole little kit when I first came on board there. And the guys always, you know, poke fun at me because I got that big old black Simpson, you know. But I like the thing. I mean, it did a good job. I mean, it's a little slower, you know. But I don't have any complaints with the thing. It's always done a good job, you know. And I keep it down there in the toolbox. One of them things I kind of cherish, you know.
Yes, Chan. Well, there were only 20,000 ohms per volt, and they could draw enough current that they could run some of the transistors if you were checking them, whereas the digitals were 10 mega ohms input impedance. But the digital, I got a Simpson. I got the company to buy me a Simpson 360 years ago to work on the DC drives for big machine tools with, you know, 40 horse up to 100 horse DC motors on it. And I could check the current real carefully in the fields, because a DC motor can run away if you lose a field. And these were vacuum tube drives in the old days. And I really liked that 360. But when they first come out with a lot of the digital meters on a big low impedance inductive load, like a DC motor on the fields or the armature, if you was checking them on the comm or something, they were inaccurate. And I'd always fall back on the old Simpson. It worked like a champ. And I had one day in the field. Well, it had a transformer on it, Chad. It had two 600-volt windings in parallel. There was just two separate windings, and they weren't common to each other in any way, shape, or form. And they'd wind them all on one big transformer to get rid of the harmonics in the tube drives. I was checking it to see if it was full field at 240 volts with my Simpson, and I dropped the lead, and it pegged the meter, and one lead was hooked on, the other one went to ground, and it just pegged it. So I went up to the 1,000-volt scale, and it pegged it. So I went over to the 5,000-volt scale, and I went to the 1,000-volt scale, and it measured a full 1,000 volts, but when I went to the 500-volt or the 5,000-volt scale, it actually was 1,200 volts, and I deduced that those two windings had shorted together in series to make 1,200 volts. And the place that wound armatures and transformers in that back in my old hometown should know that was impossible. That it would blow up. So anyways, finally I couldn't figure it out. My boss couldn't figure it out. It was, I forget how many. It was like $80 or $100 an hour for a field service engineer. And so he called Westinghouse, and they sent a guy out. And I said, would you like to know my opinion? And he was real snotty. Usually they were real nice. He says, no, I'll formulate my own opinion. Okay, I said, but just in case you want to know, I think the 600-volt secondaries are sorted together. And 4 days later, he was wanting to go home because they always went home on Friday morning, and they'd fly home. And he come over and says, I think I found your problem. And I said, yeah, what is it? And he says, well, I think them 600-volt windings are shorted.
I see. Yeah, well, you know, sometimes those guys that float around, they, you know, get a little complex. And we had some guys in the military that were reps for TACOM, Tank and Automotive Command. That's supposed to have been the best of the best of, you know, the maintenance guys. The TACOM guys weren't that bad. They were the gearheads, the mechanics, that kind of thing. But the CECOM guys, Communication and Electronics Command, oh, you never met more snottier people. I mean, it just, you know, they didn't want to hear what you had to say. You know, it's just always some kind of, you know, snotty comment and this, that, and the other. We never could say anything with them, to them, or anything. We just let them kind of do their thing. But I know what you mean. One year I got sent up to Toby Hanna Army Depot up in Pennsylvania for a month to work with the CECOM guys. Our unit had ordered 13 TACSAT terminals and 2 TROPO terminals. So being the electronics section, they sent me up there for a month to work with them and help them put the things together, you know. I was pretty good with Claustrons, you know. So I put together all the Claustrons and tested them out and that kind of thing. But you get to know them, they, you know, pretty nice fellas. But it, boy, it sure does, it takes a while to get to know them. You know what I mean?
The school, I got a picture of them here, matter of fact, of the class with the guys from the Chrysler Lima tank plant in Lima or Lima, Ohio. I can't remember which one they called it. But that was really nice guys. And that was a fascinating tank. Now, they didn't tell me too much, but they used the same spindle drive as we use on CNC lathe. Now, I don't know where they used it at. I guess just a speed control, because that black box, which it was a very good-sized black box, it was probably 3 foot high and, 2 feet or more wide, was good for up to 3,500 horsepower. And they used them on diesel engines, too. At Erie, Pennsylvania, they made the locomotives. There's a big General Electric plant there, and there were 16,000 employees. And we got to go through that. It was really interesting. But, Chad, I'll let you go. And, yeah, I still love my old 260. And the good thing about it is you could be quite a ways away from it and pushing buttons and checking things, and you could always see that needle a lot better than you could a digital readout. And Claystron transmitters, that's getting over my head. That's microwave stuff. I studied it a little bit. Take care. Come down here, and I'll give you one of those. And you're only 5 miles away, so get your butt down here, and you can go try that out. And if it don't work, we'll just keep it anyways. KL4NUE, this is NGRLTR for your final chat.
Appreciate it, and I'll leave you with this. So, I didn't care much for the TACSAT. They were pretty much, you know, low noise, low power. But the TROPO rigs, now that's a little bit different story. We kept some, we called them Mickey Mouse, you know, two big reflectors, look like Mickey Mouse ears. But, the shelters had a communication electronics repair van that went with each system. And the repair van got wired into the operations of it. So, you know, you kept maintenance man on duty 24 hours, and then the operators stayed in their vans, and anything went wrong with, you could monitor everything that the operator was doing in the maintenance van. And, you know, maintenance guys, they don't always get along with the operators, that kind of thing. But you get on a deployment, you kind of learn to like one another, you know, get along best way you can. But Anna used to send me care packages, and she'd send Orville Redenbacher's microwave popcorn in the bags, and had that little metal shield underneath the popcorn in the bag. Well, we'd tape that thing to a broom handle, and we'd go out there and stick it in front of the output on that, on the right reflector on the tropo, and it wouldn't take long. It just blew the whole bag up full of popcorn. We just, you know, grin like pigs and go in there and eat our popcorn in the shelter, you know. So, you know, I get it. But, Tom, you have a wonderful evening, sir, and I'll swing by there tomorrow and pick the chip up and see what that does. 73's to you, and tell Miss Bernice we said hello, and see you tomorrow, Tom. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome, Chad. I thought about that earlier, and I was telling Bernice how you could cook things with Klystrons there. I said, that's what Chad's going to tell me, because we just finished eating some Orville Redenbacher's, isn't it, Bernice, up there? The microwave popcorn.